The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
This is WHFR Dearborn, 1 p.m. on Friday, and it's now time for our weekly public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding areas. Hi, my name is Jay Koronek, and I'm your host along with Dennis Reimars, who is our WHFR news director. Happy Friday, Dennis.
You also. Good afternoon. Hey, how was the, did you go to the market this morning?
Oh, I did.
And pretty busy.
Fresh vegetables and all kinds of stuff around there. Yes, it was busy as usual. One of the three big bread vendors, though, I think their name is Heartland. I heard the people of Booth saying that the man that owns the bakery, he's ending his business.
No kidding.
So they can't bring any bread anymore in the future. So I think it was the last day for them. Their bread was really good, solid, all kinds of grains, but it was like $7 or $8 a loaf.
Right.
And both the other two bread vendors there, Avalon and Traffic Jam, well, Avalon price varied, and they had some smaller loaves and baguettes and things. But they were less expensive, and Traffic Jam was only $3 a loaf at most for their choices. So
right.
I don't think they were selling that much there except to some sort of specialty, you know, people that are really interested in that very, very special heavy-duty bread that Heartland had. So, but that's the ebb and flow of business.
Right, exactly.
This fellow, I think they said he was just near retirement, too. He just didn't want to continue.
The good news about the market is there are other options, you know. Like you said, there's two other places that'll mm-hmm. just come right in. Who knows, maybe even more in the future. Of course, we were, at this time last week, we were outdoors and enjoying a rather beautiful day at homecoming. And I don't know if you want to do any kind of synopsis, but I thought it did go well for us.
Yes. No, thank you to all of the people that came by our WHFR booth were out there and bought our used CDs and our logo items and got our free pens and new stickers and so on. It was great to see you. It's always great and great fun to be out there in spite of whatever humidity or rain that might happen.
Yeah,
it wasn't that much.
And no.
Boy, it was... It's a great time was had by all.
And you got a chance to talk to Mr. Duraney again on Saturday. It was nice.
That's right. He came by exactly as scheduled. Boy, they got him on a tight leash.
He
there,
probably has something to do with it, too. He's pretty prompt. You know?
No, he's very much sort of a take charge, get involved, be out there with the public kind of person. I'm sorry to say I've seen other elected representatives at homecoming in the past, and, of course, a lot of them do sponsor and try to make an appearance at one of the Elder Fest, one of the senior activities, since they vote a lot and they vote by those mail-in ballots, and so that's an important group to have on your side when election comes. Durrani actually worked for 4 hours at the information table at the center. Of course, that's a great visibility for him, too.
Sure.
But he actually did work there and was putting in his time. And he was around, I think, all 3 days in one way or another. On Saturday, he actually worked 4 hours.
For sure. We saw him on Friday in the parade. So.
Right.
You're right.
No, we had a great time. On the show last Friday, though, two things. One is, I'm sorry I didn't get to read out loud the Jim Hightower commentary. At the last minute, we did an interview with the Kiwanis people who were raising money for their causes, mainly helping children in the Dearborn area through the Turbo Turtle Derby.
That is just a great name, isn't it?
Yeah. And so, but so what I didn't get in, and we definitely have to do today, is to feature the in detail what are the exact words that are in the four advisory questions that are going to be on the ballot in Dearborn. Now, again, they're only advisory questions, so maybe it doesn't matter if you, you know, pay attention or not. It doesn't compel anyone directly to take action. But I think it'll still mean something politically, especially if a lot of people vote, and especially if it's really a sort of a lopsided result.
Absolutely.
Too. It's like 10-1 in favor of one option or the other, because, you know, those things will be noticed, and maybe the city council will act on what the majority or the plurality anyway wanted. So maybe we should start with that so I don't forget to get it in on today's show, okay?
I don't think we have any surprise guests, okay. So we're good.
All right. Now, in the paper, this, which edition here?
Are you looking for where you got the info?
No. Well, I thought I wrote... Oh, no wonder. It's the wrong sheet I'm looking at. Okay, it's what we did last week.
We're just bombarded with paperwork.
I thought all these stories look old. Yeah, we did them last week. Okay. In the press and guide from this Wednesday, that would be August 10th. Did I say today was the 12th? It is August 12th.
Yes,
that's live. The August 12th edition of the Journal, if you're listening live at 89.3 FM or by our stream from WHFR.FM. Okay, Dearborn City Council finalizes language for two millage proposal for November 8th ballot. So apparently they approved of the concepts, but they had to fine-tune in the last week the ballot language for the millage proposals. But it's yes or no. It's pretty straightforward on those folks. 3.5% additional millage goes into the general fund of the city for only the next 5 years, and then it's gone. Okay, that's the first one. And we've talked about that before. The second millage proposal is an additional 1 mil that would go only to the Dearborn Libraries. Now, they really need about 2 mils to continue operating at the present level, but this would be a tremendous help, sort of a secure foundation to keeping it, at least the Centennial open, at least one library open. Again, we've discussed pro and con of those proposals, and even last week we brought up Adam Adamski, mm-hmm. also known as Mario Fundarski, his objections to those proposals. So we won't go into that again right now. But let's look at the advisory votes. Now, these things are, I don't know if they're going to change the wording or not of these, but they didn't do it at the last city council meeting. Alrighty then. Now, I'm not sure. There is a ballot question. It will affect the charter. So it's not a millage proposal. And we talked about it last week, but just so you know, elimination of the civil service system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a yes or no. They don't think it's needed, but the charter says it's got to be there. What they're proposing is that it be replaced with a human resources commission to oversee employment issues. So, okay, we're not going to talk further about that. But let's look at the other, because that's not an advisory question.
No, it's not, but it's. I have a feeling it's more than just a name change. I think they're going to downsize dramatically. You know, that's...
Well, if they have people that are not doing anything, but were forced to be hired because it's in the charter,
yeah, right.
Absolutely, that would be downsized. Okay, and I don't quite understand, even in the on the website, you know, they don't list it like advisory question 1 or 2 or 3 or whatever, but they are there and they're in bold letters. So in no particular order.
Alphabetically.
I've got them all messed up here. Okay, elimination of the annual leaf program.
Okay.
Now, I didn't know we could do without leaves. Trees would be upset to hear that, but it's actually the annual leaf special leaf collection program where you in Dearborn, and people listening in Detroit, sorry about this, but in Dearborn, because you don't have the service, Dearborn, you could rake your leaves from your yards, all of them, to the curb, okay, in the street, at the curb, and the city would come by with its blowers and sweepers and so on and pick them up that way.
Big trucks.
Yeah, now, typically, there would be a cycle for it. They don't want you to do it before the trucks are coming, and they're always changing the time because of bad weather, and the trucks can't pick up for a day. So however you can find out, which is very confusing to find out which day they're really coming, and they're not really ticketing anybody that rakes ahead of time by a day or two, because you never really know, and you got to have a computer in order to really look it up or call City Hall every day. You know, that's crazy. So there is a little bit of confusion about when they're coming, and there's a regulation saying, you know, oh, they're going to fine you, you know, so much money because your leaves weren't out only the day before or the day of. But so it's an annual leaf, a special annual leaf collection program in the fall from, late September through November, sometimes into early December. They extended a week. That's confusing, too, because the city, a lot of leaves came down late, so we're going to extend it. Well, how do we everybody find out? You know, is it in the paper? Not always, because they just decide at the last minute. So in any event, it means you do not have to necessarily bag them or put them in organic waste containers, trash, you know, plastic trash containers. It saves you a little trouble by just getting them to the front curb. However, how do you get them to the front curb? Well, you got to rake like crazy to get them to the front curb, or use those large tarps.
So we do, yeah.
That you rake it into the tarp, and then you drag the tarp to the front curb, and then of course they spill all over into half the street, and then you got to rake. So I don't know if it's really any less work. Some people think it's convenience. I hate to say it, but it's, you know, opinions on the show are those of us only, necessarily Henry Ford Community College or the administration or the students, but I'm gonna vote it down.
Can I ask you a question?
Okay, I don't see any point in it. Of course, I have a small yard. I turn my front yard into a forest, so I don't have much grass to cut or leaves to rake in the front.
Right.
And I like the exercise, actually, of physically raking. I don't use one of those noisy blowers, and putting them in barrels.
Now, those noisy blowers are ineffective on the wet leaves. Yeah. Anyway, you've been in Dearborn for a long time. Was there ever
Since 79, but that means I'm just a newbie.
Yeah, good point, actually. Was there ever a time, do you think, that they could burn leaves?
Because there were rules against that, environmental quality rules, I think 20, 30 years ago. But I remember in Detroit when I was growing up in the 50s, we burned leaves. We had the... You could do that.
So then. Many people do that out, obviously, out
still?
Away from the bigger cities. In South Lyon and those areas in Milford, they do.
I don't know if it's state laws about that or county air regulation laws or just city, but almost no one in the urban areas are allowed to do that anymore.
Right.
And how much would this save? They will save, according to the wording here, $400,000 a year. And that's the question. Just yes or no on this one. The others are multiple choice. But should the city eliminate the annual leaf pickup program in the fall? So however you feel on that, you know, it's $400,000 one way or the other. I don't see it's needed. They're still going to get leaves, but you have to put them in bags or put them in trash barrels. And I don't find a problem doing that myself. I have a huge backyard, I have to say. And so I just work in from week to week, four barrels a week, and in after four pickups, it's gone. And oh, by the way, those are picked up with the regular trash weekly. So always know when they're going to get the so-called organic trash that is also the bundled leaves.
Right. You know, you put your neighborhood kids to work, too. That's what we do.
Well, okay. But, you know, and sometimes if it goes in the street, it covers half the street. When it rains, leaves are very slippery for the cars in the street. There is a fire hazard. Not that anybody would set a fire, but if a lot of dried leaves are lying in a pile in the concrete and the car pulls over, sometimes there's a spark or the hot muffler.
That happened to my aunt and uncle. It's true.
Yeah. So there's actually safety problems with all those leaves in the street. That's why I said, and it's whatever you want, folks. I don't care. I'll still continue putting my stuff in the barrels and raking it in. Yes or no on that one. So that's clear. Okay. Yes or no about eliminating the annual special curbside leaf program. I mean, the way it's unless you read the details, you might think they're not going to pick up leaves at all or something. No, it's with the regular trash, bagged or containerized, as they say, on regular trash days. So,
the only added expense to the consumer or to the resident is more of those organic bags.
Yeah. That's and the city says here in the paragraph about it will also require, if they eliminate it, greater enforcement actions to encourage compliance. There's going to be a few people that will still rake their leaves to the curb because they haven't heard.
Sure.
Even if it's approved. Well, that, you know, go ahead, city, send out your mailings. I know mailings cost a little money, but people will get the idea after a year or two, I think. So I can't imagine that greater enforcement actions is going to cost very much, and it's going to be just...
It does sound ominous, though, doesn't it?
It's a normal... Yeah, you're going to get all the cop cars out there, SWAT teams.
Yeah, SWAT teams. Helicopters.
You put your leaves on the next to the curb.
They have satellite now for that.
Oh, yeah, right. I'm sure Google Maps they'll be using. Okay, so that's straightforward. Now, and I don't know the order on the ballot, but the next one, according to my printout... Whoops, I jumped ahead. Is size and cost of a library system. Now, this is multiple choice. And, folks, this is five choices. I know, after being a teacher for 40 years at Henry Ford Community College, students hate five multiple choice responses to a multiple choice question because that lowers the odds that they can guess.
That's a really good point.
So it's pretty confusing. But you got five choices here. And here's what the choice is. Size and cost of a library system. And let's not worry about the wording and the background of it. But the question is, how many library buildings do you believe the city of Dearborn should fund? And you can vote only for one choice. So your top choice here. And of course, they're in order from really funding everything.
Which is the
to,
way it is
to
now?
Nothing.
Okay.
Yeah. The first one is A, Dearborn should fund the main Centennial Library and three branch libraries. And I thought we had, I thought that was the situation before they closed the one branch.
Right, Esper Bryant Snow.
Esper, well, okay, there's, so this is saying, advisory question, open the one you closed.
Okay.
Because one is already closed in the current budget.
Are
one of the
missing?
Branch libraries. We said that last week.
Right, you're right, you're right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So, so the first one means let's get back to what we had before.
Okay.
All three branches and the Centennial open and the same operating cost, which is $5 million, by the way. Now, how does, of course, how does, and I'll read the other four right now, and then we'll talk about how this relates back to the millage.
Right. Okay.
That might be passed for it. Number two, B, Dearborn should fund the main Centennial Library and two branch libraries at an estimated annual operating cost of $480,000. They don't say which two those two are, but I assume it just means the one that's already closed might stay closed.
Right.
But what's the difference? Only $200,000. Either $5 million for choice one or $4.8 million. $200,000 difference a year, which seems to me a relatively small percentage of the total budget. So opening that other branch library, it's true, it would cost us another $200,000, but saving on the leaves is $400,000. So
yeah.
if you kill the curbside leaf collection, then you've got enough to keep you. Okay, and the third choice, Dearborn should fund the main Centennial and only one branch library. I bet that would be Bryant.
I would think so, right?
Just because it's on Michigan Avenue and yeah. It's got the Chamber of Commerce.
A lot of traffic, sure.
Yeah, but anyway. Market. Yeah. It would. Oh, and there's that deed issue, too.
Doesn't
Ford own the land or something there? So
yes.
that makes it all a little more complicated. Well, if they close two of the current three branches and keep the Centennial, it would only lower the cost another $200,000 to $4.6 million.
I'm starting to think Centennial is pretty expensive, aren't you?
Well, just having, yeah,
the
Centennial
fountain.
Is the main library, and well, you know, that's another thing, is that fountain was donated and by some nice people. But the maintenance per year, I understand, is quite substantial, and the city has to pay that, so I don't know.
Maybe that's why they don't have it going all the time.
But you see what they're doing here, because choice four is Dearborn should fund only the main Centennial at an estimated operating cost of $4.4 million. So it's only another, so it's $200,000 per branch.
That's,
and altogether, it's only $600,000 out of $5 million for the branches. So the Centennial, all by itself, you're right, costs $4.4 million. Now, maybe some of the programs or some of the librarians would be cycled back to beef up some of the areas or services at the Centennial, we don't know. But, you know, if you look at those four choices, I mean, this is maybe why they phrased it this way. Said, gee whiz. For only $600,000 extra, which is only $200,000 more than the losing the Leaf program, we could have every branch library stay open and keep the status quo going.
Right.
So it just shows you, or I think they're trying to educate you, is that the branches don't cost that very much, and maybe they mean a lot more for those of you that live nearby one and count on it for free books, free newspapers, magazines, free internet access. And we had Marcel Piltorak, who is head of the Library Commission here a couple weeks ago on this show, and he talked about all kinds of other great initiatives for community service and That's community right. involvement that could be done, just keeping these buildings going, these branches going. And of course, but choice number five, this is your fifth choice, nothing.
You know,
Dearborn should not fund any library buildings, which means, and I wish I wouldn't phrase it that way, we won't have a library.
You know, what's interesting is they bypassed another option. Maybe they didn't want to add six, but close the main branch, the Centennial Library, and expand the services at the other ones for a much more efficient and...
Well, there is another option, although it takes away the whole idea of a library with a physical existence, is to... And it doesn't say this for choice six. If you don't fund any library buildings, you could still fund online.
Absolutely. And they're already going that route
anyway. If they had a library website that, and apparently it's partially functional now, but they would still need a building somewhere to maintain the documents before they scan them in or to coordinate. They would still need librarians to work on that. But a lot of things, not everything, and I'm not in favor of online only, but I'm just saying is that that fifth one is not really worth. There's a lot of confusion to me. I hope they reword that because it gives the ideas that, I mean, if they really mean we should not operate a library, fire all the librarians, get rid of all the books, burn them or something, or give them away free, that'd be better, then that's one thing. But if they mean, if they keep it an open idea that we would keep librarians and shift to online only, which I'm not in favor of, but still, I don't know if any city has done that, but there are many online services apparently available right now. How they would do that without a lot of librarians and a good physical location like the Centennial sort of boggles my mind.
That's the only way. You're right. You know,
maybe the mayor will let them use his office or something.
There's a lot of books that our library here at the college, they don't carry, but we have access to them through the system. And I think that's a wonderful, if that's what you mean by online, it works. You just need a pickup point, right?
Right.
Yeah. So it works.
Yeah. No, there's so many reasons, and we've gone into these in other shows about the need for a physical library and a print-based collection, even though you can have online options. There's so many reasons for that. So obviously I'm a library supporter, library advocate, being a teacher for all these years, I know the value of a library, and I don't want to be without it. And so given opinions, I'll vote for the whole $5 million. For Pete's sake, I'd vote for the first choice. I want all the branches and the Centennial to keep going. Now, what about that millage?
Thank you. That sounds good, too.
Well, who knows? One mil, as we said, is not enough, but maybe would, if the 3.5 mil additional is approved, maybe that would be, if a large plurality or maybe even a majority vote for choice A, that is the 5 million, Centennial and the three branches, open that one that's closed, that the city will dedicate that extra money from the general fund on top of that one mil, but then it wouldn't hurt the general fund quite so much. You know, it would relieve the general fund because there's incoming money. About half, if I understand what Marcel told us, to maintain what we have now totally would take two mils from the people. So just split that in half. So I assume that one mil is about $2.5 million raised. Mm-hmm. And I could be wrong about this. Maybe it's a little less than that. So the city would only have to really put in $2.5 million if that one mil passed, because that's additional revenue coming in dedicated to the library. So if you chose A, the city, their old money or their general fund money would be reduced from $5 million to only $2.5 million, just to get us back to where we were with full service or sort of full service. I still hate the hours, like no Saturday open hours. Give me a break.
Right, but the best time to go. And usually that's when they have many of their things for kids. They go on Saturday mornings and activities.
Yeah.
Wasn't there didn't they have the right to bring money in without a vote to a degree on them?
Well, from what Marcel said, yes. But what it says actually in the minutes of the city council, they try to give you the idea
this is
that
confused
it isn't.
Me a lot.
Hard okay. to believe, right? the council claimed that they could not, without voter approval, give any money, any additional millage money. They couldn't like they did with the 1.5 mil for the general fund,
right.
That they had no right to give more money to the library by raising a millage. And Marcel said the state of Michigan does allow a community, the elected representatives, without a vote of the people, to dedicate 1 mil. To the libraries
without the and then his
without the vote of the people,
and
but
he said if we get the mill through this vote, that would be all we need. So and I remember your question to him was, we don't need a full mill, do we? If we have this ability without a vote, then we don't need a full mill to counteract that.
That would be right if the city would, but either the council was uninformed. I mean, Marcel is head finance director; he knows what the state laws are on this. But the council is trying to give the impression that, oh, we can't do without a vote of the people. Well, that's not true in terms of 1 mil. They could just go and do it and raise your taxes 1 mil without your approval. I'm sorry, but it, you know, that plus the voters approving another mil, that would do it.
It would do it.
Now, Marcel also said that the state will allow up to, the request would be up to 2 mils for the library. I don't know why there's a cap, but there is a cap, by the vote of the people. So, in other words, and this is what I said before, if you're going to approve of support by a separate millage for the libraries, why not approve of a millage that pays for all of it?
Right.
Just, and it would be 2 mils. And the city council could have done that. Well, they didn't do that. But they're trying to, in the words I see, right in the minutes here, say that, oh, we put, you know, the 1 mil on the ballot because we have to have your permission. Well, yeah, if they take route number 2, asking for permission, but route number 1, according to Marcel, was they could have just done it.
Right.
They could have just raised the taxes. But I guess they were, well, we already raised a 1.5, and people probably will scream about that later. So I guess they didn't have the courage to stand up for all the way for the libraries. And I think the, you know, Marcel's ideas as head of the library director or the commission,
right.
He should be very influential. He had great ideas for renovating and bringing the libraries up to a real useful status. And it's not just, like it says here, computer access has grown and they need more technological resources. He had all kinds of ideas beyond that for the use of the buildings, like community meetings. And I mean, that's what I have done limited reading about where libraries are succeeding throughout the U.S. and where they are succeeding. They're going in some of the ways that he mentioned. So I really hope the money is there and the commission can redirect our libraries to their basic purposes and also the new purpose. Some people might say, oh, they just want more computers. No, that's not it.
That's not it at all. No. And you remember, he had a really good point. A reason why the libraries are far less attended now is because some of the people that held library cards were employees. They didn't have to be residents. They could be employees or students in Dearborn. And because of the economy, a lot of people lost their jobs here. So it is down. You know, they're not as attended.
Well, we're almost halfway through the WHFR Journal for the show today, but we're not going to take a break until we finish these four questions. I know, I should, like the commercial stations tease you. Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to know about the other two, stay tuned. No, I'm going to do them, and then we have Jim Hightower's comment, and then a comment that's very similar from Jack Lessenberry, which I want to share. Always controversial. Okay, number of outdoor swimming pools. That's advisory question, or the third one that we're mentioning here. I don't know what order it's going to be on the ballot. Okay, during the summer months, it says the city of Dearborn has traditionally provided swimming at up to 8 outdoor pools. 6 of the existing pools were built in the mid-50s, and another was added in 64. These 7 pools have been continuously operating and require ever-increasing upgrades and replacement equipment. The redesigned Dunworth Pool Complex at Levegood Park was constructed in 76. That's a spirit. But that was 35 years ago. Dunworth is open 51 hours for open swim per week. It doesn't seem like a lot.
How many?
51. There's 168 hours in a week. So that's open 51. A third.
Well, they got to sleep,
I guess. Yeah, and swimming in the dark, if it's not lit, I guess it'd be confusing. You wouldn't know which way to go to the edge of the pool and
that's
drown and so on. And the neighborhood pools are open 35 hours a week for open swim for approximately 2 months of summer. So I guess they're trying to say in that paragraph, and there's always a hidden agenda there, said, well, that's not many hours, and boy, it sure cost a lot of money. Anyway, it says, given the city's budget challenges, what number of outdoor swimming pools should the city maintain in the future? And you can vote for only one. And there are, again, five choices. Except the last one is more clear. That is, no outdoor pools.
At all.
Yeah, gone. Bye-bye. So, you can't do pools online.
I don't want to take too much time. Two seconds.
Go.
I'm walking my dog around Ten Eyck yesterday. There's a pool there. It was hopping. They had a DJ. I'm not kidding. I heard the chicken dance. I heard the hokey pool. I thought I was at a wedding. I did. And as we're walking around the park, I hear the gentleman, the DJ, say, come back. Thank you for making this a successful party night. Come back tomorrow to do it again. And it was, I'm not kidding, Jay. It was crazy. There were more people there than I'd ever seen, double than I'd ever seen. And I've been in that area for years. So all I can say
is... So it's not just swimming.
It was a DJ, and they were dancing, and they were kids, and they were swimming, they were doing everything, and it was off the hook busy.
I wonder if the city did something like that, or just the neighborhood residents.
I promise you.
There are a number of people that are actually trying to not just save their neighborhood pools, but actually support them, people in the neighborhood.
Kristen was a big...
Donating their time for this or that, or supervision, or whatever is legal. And so I know that definitely people in that area that use the pool, that they would be glad to help maybe provide a DJ, toss in some money, you know, if the city wasn't the one that did it.
They had to have, because we're looking at, I mean, the city isn't in a position to do that, unless it was a volunteer.
I wouldn't think so. Yeah, know? Maybe somebody just said, I'll do it.
I have no idea, but there will be again tonight, and I will talk to people.
Passing out his DJ cards for possible business, you know,
sure.
Maybe it is a little promotion for them that way.
But we'll definitely find out.
Okay, well, here's the five choices for the number of outdoor pools. The first one, the big one, again, the most money. Dunworth Pool and seven additional pools will stay open at an estimated annual cost for operations and capital replacement of $1,540,000. So that's the pool cost. Again, if you want all the libraries to continue, that's $5 million.
Right.
But remember, if you only want the Centennial, that's still $4.4 million. So it's a lot of money for libraries, but I mean, what a resource, what a historical resource, educational resource, and so on. But nonetheless, and thinking that the pools, how many hours they use in those pools? Well, still, so the big cost of keeping them all open and rebuilding them and reconstructing them, they say is $1,540,000. Although, I'm wondering about that. After they recondition or replace these pools, the cost will go down.
Yeah, that's a one time every however many years.
Maybe every 10 years or 20 years or something. So I don't know how much of that $1,540,000 they say is capital replacement.
This wording is a little tricky.
How many years will it be that much once they do the replacement? Maybe it takes 5 or 6 years to do them in, you know, one pool a year or something. But how many years will be? I bet the actual operation is much less than that if you don't talk about the replacement. But how many years will it be at this amount before the replacement is done? And then it's got to go down lower for maybe 10 years more or 15.
It just seems like maybe they took the replacements into consideration and this is the average per year.
Yeah.
Considering, I mean, but they don't tell us, and I think that's your point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to need that capital replacement at that amount after they're finished with these pools, and maybe they did equate this for like 10 years or something in terms of replacement, but then you should have at least another 10 years without the need for major upgrades. Oh, well, now, choice two is less. It's the Dunworth Pool. Looks like Dunworth is really central to all this.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure why.
Levagood's a huge park. And of course,
that's at Levagood.
So that west side of Telegraph,
I've been there.
As well. Sure.
I've been there. So that is huge. And it's the newest.
Yes.
But it's also the largest. It's got a couple of wading pools.
You would think less money invested to keep it going immediately because it is newer.
But of course, the people on the east side of town don't like that idea so much because Levagood is clearly west.
But they have one over by on the east side over on
Greenfield. Well, of course, there's a pool in the center. So that's sort of on the east side of the center.
Good point. Right on Greenfield.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Greenfield, Michigan. The third choice, or the second choice, is Dunworth and five pools. I don't know which two you'd lose. They don't say. But the cost would be reduced $280,000, looks like, to $1.26 million. And then choice C, Dunworth Pool and three pools. Again, they don't say which before their closing here, estimated annual cost of $980,000, so almost $1 million there. So the difference between Dunworth and 3 and Dunworth and 7 is only, he says, $600,000, including this replacement, capital replacement cost. Now, choice 4, Dunworth and the Ford Woods Outdoor Pool.
That's the one I was just talking about over by Disc.
So if you keep only those two, and that's more in the center of town, the Ford Woods Pool, wouldn't you say it's close to?
It's by Greenfield. Greenfield and Ford Road.
Greenfield
yeah.
and Ford.
Yeah.
Oh, so it is the east side.
That's your east side. That's if you're going to keep two, that makes a lot of sense.
Now, that reduced almost the cost of operating Dunworth and 7 additional in half to only $700,000, but it's still $700,000.
But if I'm not mistaken, they just upgraded Ford Woods, so there will be less. That's very new as far as that maintenance.
I don't identify what the breakdown would be for that.
Huh.
So again, just like with the library, the difference in the first four, if you really look at the dollars collected, all the pools, cost $1.5 million. But two pools, the two biggest pools, one east, one west, still cost $700,000. So half the price, approximately. But for another $700,000-$800,000, you're going to have Dunworth and Woods and six more. So seems like those other pools don't cost that much. It's like the branch libraries don't really cost that much for each branch. Okay, $200,000 per branch. Here it looks like, by golly, look at that. It's about $200,000 per pool, at least the small pools. I'm doing math in my head here, so I'm probably off a little bit. But,
yeah.
And, of course, choice E is quite clear, no outdoor pools. So where do you stand on the pools? Vote your choice November 8th. Remember, you need to be registered in order to vote November 8th. Register by October 8th, whatever day that is. Okay, the last of the four advisory questions is that won't have any direct compulsion on the part of the city, but maybe they'll do it, especially if they have the money. Annual funding for the historical museum.
Yeah.
And this one surprised me. I didn't know this had to be put as a question. But the city of Dearborn, since we're always so much into history, and Henry Ford and that, we don't want to have a historical museum?
I know. Doesn't that kind of seem like a no-brainer?
Why would the city want to put that advisory question on there? Yeah, it seems like a no-brainer to me. I mean, we're so into Dearborn and Henry Ford, and you said, well, we got the Henry Ford, we got the museum, but they're not devoted directly to Dearborn's history. What is it? What is the funding choices? Well, there's only four possibilities there. Apparently, given the limited amount of resources available, how much should the city of Dearborn spend each year to support the museums and their programs? And again, there's two buildings, actually. It's the Commandant's Headquarters and the McFadden Ross House. So that's why they say museums. There's two buildings. Okay. Apparently, the present budget, full-blown, is $350,000 a year.
Okay.
The cost of two branch libraries. Well, when you do this comparison, voters will do this. Well, what would I rather have, an extra branch library or two?
Should I go
or
read
the
about
historical
the
museum?
Right.
I mean, when you put them all together, somebody's bound to look at the cost and try to see where the value, or an extra pool,
But doesn't the library...
$350,000 almost pays for, a pool and a half.
Doesn't it seem like that would be easier to cut that money down? Because, let's face it, the things that you don't acquire things, mostly they're donated.
Well, they're open year-round, by standard business hours, I think, but they have special activities on the holidays.
True. Let them follow Christmas. The hours of the pool, because that seems like they may save some bucks.
I don't know anything about that. I'm sure if we had someone, Bill Hackett, former history professor here from the college, he's part of the historical museum group, support group, and I'm sure any one of the people from the museum, maybe we ought to have them on here to defend themselves, because I think they're going to get the short stick, for the people, because the pools, all that water to swim in, and then the branch libraries, and they think about the museum. How many people have gone to our own museums? Probably not that many people.
No.
Of course, I know some people in Dearborn haven't been to the Henry Ford Greenfield Village either.
Oh, really?
Well, you grow up here, it's always there. You can always go, but you never go.
That's true.
So I can always go, but I don't. $250,000 a year is the second choice, so it's only $100,000 less. And it doesn't say what the difference is. What do you lose other than $100,000? You cut some staff, you close, you turn back museums. Hours. The third choice is, just spend $150,000 a year. Well, what do you lose?
It's kind of important to know.
You only open one day a week then? Yeah. I mean, how can people vote on this? How much should they spend each year to support the museums? Now, of course, a museum could try to raise more money. I mean, they could try to have fundraisers or whatever. Sure. I mean, they do now, I think. Friends of the Historical Museum. How can a good citizen who's smart and how can they decide between those amounts? Sure, if I didn't know any better, I'd say, I want it to continue, but as little as possible.
Right, wouldn't that make, yeah.
It seems to me, that the average person, Dearborn, will vote for choice three, that is $150,000 a year, because it's just less.
And
they don't know what they're losing. Right. They don't know what's going to be lost, whether it's hours or support staff, or are they going to sell some of the historical documents to Henry Ford or something? I mean, what are they going to do? They can't do what they're doing now. And, of course, choice number four, no funding at all. Well, I guess that means we close them. Will we tear down the buildings?
And then where does the stuff go?
I don't know.
And...
Well, I just can't figure no funding. That doesn't make any sense.
No.
We've got two buildings. There's stuff there that has historical significance. I guess we could donate all of it to the Henry Ford. But do they have space for it?
Right.
They want to have a separate building or display. Where are they going to put it? I don't think they have any extra place for that. So,
they should be an extension of the Henry Ford where they can go over there for an added fee to go over. And
I mean, I would certainly hope that the city council, because this wording, where did it come from? Again, it came at the last minute. Even the library was surprised that this came up. I don't know who worked on the wording of the library proposal advisory question, but this one for the Historical Museum, I think it's deadly. I think it focuses people on, they can get by with $150,000 instead of $350,000. Well, I'm going to vote for $150,000. Now, again, the no funding would be interesting, too. We got Henry Ford Museum. We don't need a museum of our own. It's just crazy. That one, I think, is the worst worded.
Mm-hmm.
I get the idea of the library one being, it's very little difference between losing a couple branches, so why not just keep them all going? The
pools?
Yeah. The pools. I didn't say how I was going to vote. I'd probably... again, since I don't use the pool, see how many people don't use the pools?
Two main branches, right?
I just go with the choice D, the two pools. And I'm sorry, folks, in your local neighborhoods, but it is pretty expensive. I mean, even the two alone cost $700,000 mm-hmm. to operate.
And like you said, there's one at the center.
Although they don't mention here $700,000. Remember the Save the Pool people? They said, yeah. But that means, for safety's sake, you have to dig up and totally remove all the pools you're not going to use and fill them in. And that's going to cost millions.
Yeah, the beautiful editorial they talked about, and they broke that money down. And they said, it's a one-time cost, though.
Right.
Yeah,
how does that figure in here?
It doesn't.
Just like one, as I said, maybe once every 10 or 20 years, putting in a whole new pool, major reconstruction.
Well, I know we have to go along, but do you remember me complaining that the tennis courts and the basketball courts at Tenneck were completely leveled because they're replacing them?
Right, yeah. Tennis is gone in Dearborn, I think.
They finally have a bulldozer out there. The grass was growing all around. I was going to take a picture to show you. They finally cut the grass. It was horrible. It was blight. It really mm-hmm. was, and they finally are doing something. But, of course, too late to play tennis this year, right? Anyway,
yep.
I digress.
No, I like tennis. I think it's a good, healthy sport. We used to have a lot of competition. Don't we have any courts over at, like, the Ford swimming? Used to be the ice rink up there. Ford Woods.
Yeah, they do have them there, but you can't go to the high schools anymore. They're brand new at Edsel Ford and then high school, so you can't play on. They won't let you for fear that.
It's only for the students.
It's only for the students.
Okay.
But we used to be able to play there. But no, you're right. Ford Woods does have some. It does level good.
Huh. Well... Anyway, okay, let's go to Jim Hightower. Here's his comment about Barack Obama and, a lot of progressives, that is liberals, that is people, not socialist folks, I don't know where you get that from, but people that really are concerned about the poor in our country and caring for all of us, giving all of us the education we need to move ahead and to get opportunities, fighting the powers that be that apparently are only supporting a small percent of our society with benefits these days. Here's what Jim Hightower, here's how he expresses his upset with the deficit and Obama's position. And right after that, I'm going to read for you, and I'm sure they didn't collaborate, but what Jack Lesenberry said about this. So here's Jim Hightower on the new WHFR Journal, WHFR.fm, the station making waves.
Sheesh. In his big battle over the debt ceiling, Barack Obama waved his white hanky of surrender, allowing the loopiest of the Tea Party extremists in the Republican House to slash some $1 trillion from national programs that ordinary Americans count on. Obama's bad deal also puts Social Security and Medicare at risk, while promising to make our depressed economy and even the deficit worse. And he cravenly conceded to the demand by GOP Tea Party extremists that tax-dodging corporations, hedge fund profiteers, and the richest 1% of our nation's plutocratic elite keep every dime of their subsidies, tax breaks, and other federal giveaways. Not to worry, though, for Obama now says that stage two of the deficit reduction process will be better. The pampered and privileged few, he insists, will also have to chip in, and that he'll be fighting for fundamental principles of fairness. But we've all seen again and again that this guy fights by backing up and begging for compromise. He talks tough about fighting for fairness next time. When will next time be now? I know a bit about fighting, having been a small guy growing up in a small Texas town where confrontations often popped up. I learned early on that you should never hit a man with glasses. You should hit him with something much heavier. The heavy something that Obama has at his disposal is the fact that the American people are overwhelmingly on his side in this fight. This is Jim Hightower saying, rather than playing budgetary patty cake with Republicans in the back rooms of Washington, negotiating over how much of FDR's New Deal to throw out the window, Obama needs to FDR up, get out of Washington, and rally the majority to go after the greed heads and screwballs with a bold program that can get America moving again. Not only moving upward, but moving together.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
And pretty strong language, huh? Who are you going to vote for out there? Now, if you're liberals or Democrats, you probably say, well, Obama deserves another chance. Certainly all the Republicans, whether there are eight of them now, and maybe Rick Perry will be added this weekend, maybe Sarah Palin. Oh, my God. I doubt it, but she's still flaunting herself shamelessly in Iowa with her bust that arrived right at the same time that Mitt Romney was making his speech, by the way. way to cut some of his sales down, you know, or his persuasive appeals. And I saw this on TV about Mitt Romney, one of those moments that may kill him later because people were recording it, a heckler. He said, you know, we may have to raise taxes. Very brave of Mitt to say that we may have to raise taxes to pay for getting out of this debt. And I thought that was very brave for him to say that. And somebody heckled in the audience and said, corporations, make them pay. So it wasn't all just conservatives there in the audience. And he turned around and said, hey, corporations are people too. Well, that's going to haunt him to death because, we don't want corporations to be, even though the Supreme Court said they are people. But the last time I checked, they don't have a pulse.
No.
So they have freedom of speech. That was what the law or the legal ruling was really about. But they have all the rights of a person. Well, okay, you have a right to die then too, I guess, if you want to. No, you don't. Sorry, that's against the law. These oligarchies, that is the limited number of big companies that really control each of our markets. You know, think of the big three. Auto industry from years ago. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, how many record companies are there worldwide that release music? There's only three in the whole world only three companies that control 85% of all the music releases, whether it's digital or records or CDs or what have you. They still make cassettes.
Do they?
There's three companies. That's called an oligarchy, folks, and they can you know, conspire among themselves. It's called collusion. I love that word, collusion. And they split up the markets, and they don't step on each other's toes, but they make sure they crush any small competitor that starts looking like they might get big. And they do it collectively to crush them. It's like the big three killed the Tucker automobile in the 1950s. Tucker Torpedo, 1950. Didn't you see the movie directed by Francis Ford Coppola, Dennis?
No.
About Tucker? No. Jeff Bridges starred in it?
Oh, no, I remember it. Is it a good movie?
Well, it's historically 70% accurate. But
I'll run out and get it then.
It's quite a story about how the Tucker Torpedo was just revolutionary compared to what Detroit was doing. And so they got all their lawyers together and they talked to their suppliers and they cut off Tucker from being able to buy any parts or get any loans. Yeah, because they had all the banks, you know, giving them loans. They said, well, you know, okay, you're giving so much to Ford and we thank you for your money, but we won't do business with you, Mr. Banker, if you give any money to Tucker. And so finally he just couldn't continue in business. And it's a classic story of oligarchies cutting down and eliminating competition so that in effect they're not a monopoly, because that'd be totally against the U.S. laws.
Right.
But they are all working together to prevent competition and therefore lower prices. And the beauty of, if there is a beauty in capitalism, the beauty is competition.
Absolutely.
And free and open. Well, oligarchies don't allow free and open competition.
It still happens, though, and they're a little more subtle, aren't they?
Yes, that's what you're finding about. Okay, what did Jim Hightower was saying? Okay, where's my blue folder? Do you see a blue folder?
I do not.
I don't see a blue folder.
It's underneath your pad, right? There. Oh, bam.
See, that's what Dennis is here. No, he's obviously important.
Obviously, okay. He gets my coffee as well.
Yeah. Okay. New York Times, Paul Krugman, their Nobel Prize winning. Is he the one or is it Friedman? No, Friedman won the Nobel Prize for economics. Well, one of the two of them, but Krugman said, President surrenders. Okay, so you know how they stand on that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I wonder how they feel.
Where is Jim Hightower?
He is in Texas right now.
Yes. Now, where is Jack Lessenberry? Here he is. Okay. Stand up and be counted.
I didn't know I was supposed to schedule him for the show.
In Metro Times this week, August 10th, Jack Lessenberry, the always controversial essayist, wrote this opinion. He said, what we should fear. It's easy to be scathingly critical of the president these days. Well, Jim Hightower just was. And he has a quote here. He starts with a quote from Franklin D. Roosevelt running for re-election in 1936. Roosevelt was first elected in 1932 amid the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. A lot of people out of work, wanting change. Well, Franklin Roosevelt in 1936 said, quote, we had to struggle with the old enemies of peace. Business and financial monopoly, speculation, reckless banking, class antagonism, sectionalism, I guess that means like North versus South or something, and war profiteering. He said, Roosevelt said, they are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred. Okay, there you go. And so Lessenberry said, don't you wish that President Obama had said those words? Wouldn't it have been something to see him go on TV and tell the nation that during the recent raising the debt wars? But he didn't, as we know. He made a deal instead to raise the debt ceiling slightly and set up a bipartisan congressional committee to study the problem and come up with a proposal in the next 3 months to dial the deficit down further. I heard today on the news this morning that they have... the Democrats, anyway, they've appointed all of their six people now. Nobody has names I recognize, but they're all from Congress, of course.
Okay.
I'm not sure Republicans have done their appointments.
I'm sure you hear those names a lot in the future now.
Oh, yeah, they will be scrutinized.
Yes.
But all the big shot names, nobody wanted to be on that committee.
No.
Oh, no. I thought, well, maybe Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic leader in the House, would want to be on that herself.
Right.
No. But she appointed three, supposedly, of her lieutenants. So people that she can control, but she wouldn't get the blame if they say the wrong thing. So
can you say no to the appointment? That would be career, that would be suicide.
I doubt it. Yeah, I will. The party would never support you for re-election right. then, probably. Okay, so Lessenberry goes on. He says, when that was done, the deficit ceiling was raised and we appointed the committee, President Obama went forth from the glowing flat screens of America and pronounced these anything but deathless words. Quote, "Now, is this the deal I would have preferred? No. But this compromise does make a serious down payment on the deficit reduction that we need," he said in words that could maybe flutter the heart of an ancient accounts payable clerk at JCPenney. That is, if they were true, which they aren't really. "Frankly," said Lessenberry, "it's easy to be scathingly critical of the president these days. He seems to be sleepwalking sometimes or led around by the nose by a band of reactionary Republicans. Yet in his defense, remember this, he knows the buck stops with him and clearly felt that someone had to be the adult in the room." In other words, not yelling and screaming and backbiting and, you know, casting aspersions and, you know, being nasty. Obama, says Lessenberry, has opponents who cheerfully would take the country down the default drain just to get some political traction. This president bailed out the irresponsible financial institutions that did so much to create the mess because he felt the alternative might have been economic collapse. And it had already begun. I mean, mm-hmm. Bush had already done it, and bipartisan support from, I think, even Obama, who was in Congress, and voted for it, too.
Right.
Bailed out the auto industry, too, for the same reason, as we know. He also wants to restore a sense of collegiality and sanity, our president does. I believe he does. Lessenberry says that's why he didn't call the GOP out last week for their stalling and delaying tactics and other lunacies. There was a time, he knows, when Washington was a place where well-intended men played politics, yes, but in the end did the best they could for this country and its people. Unfortunately, for too many today, the game is all about winning. Others are so stone ignorant. I love that phrase. They're so stone ignorant. How ignorant is a stone?
He's pretty stone ignorant.
Yeah. I don't think a stone would do well on an IQ test.
I like the word collegiality. That was good.
Yeah. So others are so stone ignorant, happily misinformed, or ideologically blinded, they are unable or unwilling to see the consequences of their action. Naturally, says Lessenberry, there have always been some like that, Joe McCarthy, Huey Long, and so forth, but they were exceptions. Reckless stupidity is now the norm. What that means is that, terrifying as this is to say, our political system simply doesn't work anymore. Not only that, perhaps can't work. Three things have happened to destroy representative democracy in this country. Too few know about them. Far fewer understand how important they are. But together, they've come close to destroying our nation's ability to respond to even the most severe economic crisis. First, there's been a huge and ongoing transfer of wealth from the poor to the rich in America. 25 years ago, when this process was already starting, the richest 1% of us took in 1/8 of the nation's total income. Today, that figure has more than doubled. So the richest 1/4 take 1% take in 25% of the nation's total income. That golden 1%, okay, and they own 40% of the nation's net worth. So they own the property, and so the 1% owns 40% of what has value still in America. He says that's not surprising, given that virtually all of what income growth there's been in recent times has gone to them. Second, political campaigns at all levels are entirely controlled by money of a sort unimaginable only a few years ago. Vast sums of money are spent on even low-level races. Millions are routinely spent to win or lose a 2-year seat in Congress. Hundreds of thousands for state legislative posts that pay a tiny fraction of that in salary. I'm amazed that George Durrani was able to get in, because he's not a millionaire himself. Now, he may have support from the Democratic committee in the state, because, you know, political parties know if a certain candidate doesn't have a lot of their own money, that they want to try to help them out to make their election possible. But costs a fortune and a lot of chicken dinners once you're in order to keep that money flowing in. Chicken dinners, fundraisers. Worse, says Lessenberry, the U.S. Supreme Court has said that any limit to corporate spending for re-electing candidates is unconstitutional. So a corporation, because they're people too,
yeah, they have feelings.
They can give as much as they want. And guess what? The big corporations have millions.
Yeah, much more than the individual.
Millions, sure, that they can throw in to make the whole, you know, say, well, I'm going to vote for that candidate because I see more ads for him on TV. That means nothing, folks. the number, frequency, length of the political commercials means nothing because corporate money and super PACs, don't get me started here, super PACs can throw money right and left. Yes, 2 minutes, I see, Dennis. But okay, let's go on to, didn't we do three? Finally, these critical facts are little known. Because of the decline of independent investigative analytical news media. What we have instead is an endless profusion of talk channels that largely features shills shrieking lies or dwelling on irrelevancies. Now, that's not us, certainly.
No.
I'm not a shill.
No, you're not, and these are not irrelevant.
I may have opinions. But,
reading Mr. Lessenberry, so I think he'd
have decided. There's nobody behind me. That's Dennis is to my right.
Yes.
Although maybe he doesn't want to be thought of that way. But
I do.
Okay. I'm pretty far to the left here. You know.
Oh,
I'm on the right side of the console.
I just got to go
okay.
ahead and finish.
Okay. Well, anyway, that's Lessenberry. We've got to conclude here. Take a read of that yourself. I left a few things out in this week's Metro Times. Always challenging, and that's what we want to do, is challenge your mind here on the new WHFR Journal and give you alternative ideas. Don't take our word for any of this. You better double-check your sources. In fact, there was something I got wrong I wanted to correct today, and now I've forgotten. Oh, my God. Oh, I think I said the election was November 2nd last week. It's
right.
November 8th.
Right.
Okay, good so call. Don't go on the wrong day. It is a Tuesday. It comes up. And
what else?
I think we did it, Dennis.
We've got a couple minutes.
And next week we do have scheduled. We don't usually do a little plug for the future.
No.
But we have Henry Ford Community College President Gail Mee.
Dr. Mee
Dr.
will be
Mee
the entire hour.
Right, the entire hour, and Dennis and I will brutally quiz her.
Oh,
who's going to be the good cop and who's going to be the bad
cop? I think we'll determine that on how we feel that morning.
Okay. Well, the story that was in the Press and Guide last Sunday is that HFCC is raising tuition 7% for the fall semester even. Mm-hmm. So students coming in better have their financial aid together. They need 7% more money for the tuition part, and that's only one of the things you have to put money into, of course, to go to college.
Right.
And you might say, well, why was that? I remember Cornick saying that the state of Michigan did not cut funding to community colleges across the state because they're doing such a great job for such low money. And that's true. But if you read the article in the, and I think it was J. Patrick Pepper, but in the, maybe not, sorry. But it was a good article in last Sunday, 8/7/11 Press and Guide. And they totally explain, I think, that even though they got the same amount of money, they didn't get any more,
right.
First of all, and costs go up.
They do.
Costs for facilities and services and energy that they have to expend to keep the buildings lit and heated and so on. And so they figured they're going to need the 7%. Now, they had already said, well, we're going to need it starting in January.
Right.
But they looked at it over the summer, and this is James Schoolmaster and the others on the Board of Trustees, the Board of Ed, same people in Dearborn, and they said, got to have it.
And they did send out a mailing. All the students received something to that effect, and it was equivalent of about $5 per credit hour.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not that much because we don't charge that much for tuition. It's not like a big four-year school tuition, which is,
but 7% sounds like a lot, doesn't
mm-hmm.
it? Yeah. And you know why? Because next year they don't want to have to raise it again. So I have a feeling that this will stay, you know.
Highway 61, this is WHFR Dearborn, and Highway 61 will start shortly. I'm sure that our podcast is already cut off, but there's a couple more stories here, so until we see Joanne today, we will, and I know they made a change in their parking